I thought I would start off this episode by saying sorry. Not that I need to, but I want to apologize for being MIA for the past few weeks. I have been absolutely exhausted and tired and overdrawn. And unfortunately, when you're trying to obviously keep up at work and meet the deadlines you have at work, and then also be a participating member in relationships and stakeholders in relationships that you have with friends and family, as well as loosely keeping a social life or the remnants of a social life together, whilst, I don't know, trying to just look after yourself and your health and your well-being. Yeah, it's left me really quite dry. So I've needed time to just breathe in. And I haven't breathed in enough, I don't believe. I'm still really quite tired and exhausted. And it's funny, it's not like a physical exhaustion. Well, it is. I feel actually, yeah, it kind of is. I feel fatigued, but I feel, and like sometimes my body is tired when it's just tired. But it's not like, you've run a marathon or not that I've ever done that, but like it's not like you're physically exhausted after a hard sort of physical exertion session. It's more like it's coming from the internal, it's the physiological sort of exhaustion from a mental or emotional battle and upheaval. And so that's been a bit of a bummer because I was kind of feeling a little too overzealous, maybe. At the beginning of the year, I was like crushing goals, I was living it up. I was still in the productive functional zone of having done transcranial magnetic stimulation therapy, the TMS that I did at the end of last year, as well as the combination of esketamine. And I think that I've sort of just hit a bit of a wall where it's petered out, which is normal. I must say it is absolutely normal. I've spoken with my clinical team about that in sort of some educational, like me understanding that whole process. TMS does tend to not wear off, but not deteriorate either, but it slows down. And so each time you get a bit of a top up, which is really handy because I'm within the 4 months. I'm about to start a top up in a few weeks. I mean, I'm within 4 months under the Medicare benefit scheme, so I get it at a reduced rate. It's still the long form because there's long form and short form. Long form's about 45, 50 minutes, and short form's 5 minutes. So, literally a fifth of time. So, I'll be doing long form again, but I'm kind of excited in a sense because I really enjoyed lying there, being stimulated magnetically, stimulated in my head magnetically, should preface, and reading a book. Yeah, reading a book, it's a pleasure that I wish I could participate in more and had the headspace to participate in more, but I don't know, my functioning or my attention span, it doesn't reach that far. So but it's a pastime that I really value and I really look up to those or aspire to be someone who does, but it's just not me. I'm too fidgety, but these sort of sessions where that's all you've got to pass the 50 minutes. Yeah, I really enjoyed. So I'll be doing that for 3 weeks and the hope is that that'll give everything a bit of a lift and a bit of a spike. I'm still doing esketamine each week and that's been really good and I've really looked forward to that each week because it's realistically the only time I get to just be. But yeah, no, it's been hard the last couple of months. And I know we're only the fourth. We're almost in the, what is it? January, February, March, April. We're almost at the end of the 4th month, and I'm already a bit like this. But I'm a bit like this because of seasonal change and the effect that that's had on my mood. I've said that before. It's a huge thing for me. Circadian rhythm disturbance is a huge thing for a number of us who not only do suffer or are challenged or experience mental ill health, but also by those who maybe don't experience mental ill health as prominently or as acutely as some others, but also those who just generally their well-being takes a bit of a hit when it's change in season because it does affect us all, just to differing degrees. So yeah, I thought I'd talk a bit about seasonal change, but I wanted to apologize that I haven't been here or releasing an episode. I felt the separation and I felt the guilt. I felt the want to come back, and I've recorded probably like six episodes or semi-recorded six episodes in order to try and get there and put one out. But I just, the perfectionist in me heightens and is inflamed when I'm not doing great. And so they were overridden by what I thought was good and what I thought was bad or believe was bad. Who knows? There might be some salvageable stuff in there. I haven't wanted to go back, but I'll most likely just re-record those and put them out over the coming weeks. But yeah, just wanted to apologize and say I'm back. Hopefully I'll be back again next week, but I'm back and I'm enjoying it. So let's jump in. Seasonal change. This is something that I've been aware of for like the last 10 years and something that I continue to experience new information about. We're on the outer side of the seasonal change at the moment. It normally happens around March, April each year, and then again September, October each year. So it happens twice, and it's in Australia, other than Perth, it's when we do daylight savings. And I think daylight savings, PSA, daylight savings is an absolute boycott on our mental health. I hate it with a passion. I know some people absolutely love it because they get extra hours in the day of sunlight. Totally get that. Love sunlight. Live for sunlight. Want to be sunlight next year for Halloween. But it affects our circadian rhythms significantly for some and only minutely for others. And I would argue that the minutely affected are the ones that love it the most, just as a potential correlation or why they tend to love it the most, because they don't see the terrible downside of it. They might be, their sleep might be a little off for a couple of weeks or a week, and then they're used to it. Whereas people like me, it's off for anywhere between a month to 2 months. So I've known about it for about 10 years and been aware of it and been conscious of the change, conscious in knowledge and education of the change and upskilling myself through my clinicians of the change. But it seems to hit me each year. I get blindsided by it. I don't expect it, even though I know that it happens at those two times, March, April, and September, October. But when my sleep gets disturbed and is knocked completely off balance, and my mood changes significantly, I think, oh crap. I think I go to the drastic thinking of like, I'm going down. Like, I don't know what to do. And I'm plotting and I'm wondering, what have I done? What's changed? And my first go-to is not seasonal change for some reason, despite knowing about it and despite it being a huge part of my sort of mental health and well-being, contributing mental health and well-being factors. I still don't think about it as the first cab off the rank. And it's normally when I am in a session, or like it happened this year, I think I've mentioned a couple of times, when my coworker who does the same, and I was like, hey, how are you? And she goes, two words, seasonal change, that I really actually am like, oh, I haven't necessarily done anything bad. It's just seasonal change. And it's an external factor, not an internal factor, that's affecting my sleep-wake cycle. It's still an emerging part of research. I've actually been one of the grant chief investigators successful with the Wellcome Trust, the organization, the Wellcome Trust, like the not-for-profit over in the UK, that we won a grant for circadian rhythm disturbances and having them recognized as hereditary or passed down, and that you have a a gene predisposition to the influences or the effects of a circadian, well, predisposition to circadian rhythm disturbances through things like seasonal change or changes in routine and things like that. Pretty much major shifts. And to be acknowledged not only as sort of the passing down of it, but also that it is a symptom for depression, and depression is a symptom for circadian rhythm disturbances, sort of like this paradoxical incestuous relationship. I think that's a 5-year grant that we have actually been invited over to London to meet with them in a couple of weeks' time, which is really exciting for a couple of days. So looking forward to that. That's sort of provided me a light at the end of the tunnel to look forward to and sort of just have a goal of getting my health up to that point and breathing in order to be able to really enjoy it and revel in it and just have an amazing time over there and experience an experience that I know not many people ever get to have. And I know the privilege that comes with that. So I really want to do that justice, and I really just want to enjoy it and learn more and meet more people. And that's exciting. But yeah, my sleep-wake cycle's been really off, and I think it's starting to get back. I'm slowly starting to wake up at the same time. But I wanted to sort of just briefly talk about essentially like what sleep-wake cycles are and the seasonal change. And I think some of the biggest factors, like I said, like my mood will change, is you feel shitter. Like you just feel worse and lethargic and you have a lower energy and you might be a bit more irritable and our anxiety might be a bit higher. And for me, I really like to just leave things in another room, leave all social media and notifications in another room. And I really just like to switch off. I like to go MIA. And essentially that's what I've been doing for the past few weeks and almost a month, actually, I think. Simultaneously, I am reaching for things to better my state, and that could be, most recently I've tried like 3 or 4 apps on tracking my mood and the factors in that and how well I've slept and how well I haven't slept and how well I've eaten or not eaten or exercise or no exercise, all of those sorts of contributing factors, and being able to look at the data tracking. And I've done it for like 4 working days, 4 business days on average, weekend counting as one. And yeah, absolutely reaching in that sense, or reaching in the sense of like, I'm going to get up and I'm going to do this. I'm going to get set reminders and, you know, this, that, and the other, and being overzealous when I realistically, I need to just be kind to myself. I need to acknowledge that this is a tough time of change and that it'll take a bit for my body to catch up to the infringed change that is, you know, from an external environment, the sun, the lowering quality and lowering height of the sun and the lower setting of the sun for us due to the hated daylight saving shift and just, yeah, take time to breathe in so that I can then efficiently and self-lovingly breathe out. So seasonal change happens, like I said, between just after like the changes from summer to winter. So around that autumn period of summer, autumn, where it's, well, actually it's kind of all of autumn really. It's from March to April, and it's when the sun lowers a bit. So we're on that whatever axis geographically or astronomically, don't ask me, the quality of sunlight in the morning and generally is lower or badder or worse than what it is in the spring summer seasons. And so it's all about that sort of like the quality, the height, and then obviously the time of rising and setting of the sun in relation to our 24-hour clocks. And so that has a huge effect on our body clocks, which sync up during our REM phase of sleep, that sort of 40 to 50 minute portion of our sleep at night that pretty much recalibrates our whole body in preparation for the next 24 hours, for the next sort of sleep-wake cycle. And that programs right down to what was initially thought to be a single clock per organ, so a single clock for your liver and your stomach and your digestive system and your heart and your lungs and your brain and pancreas and all of those different moving parts that then gestalt are your whole body rhythm that tells your liver when to sort of start digesting things or processing things, and your stomach to start just digesting and, you know, brain to stay awake and excrete oxytocin, I think, and suppress melatonin and when to increase melatonin and suppress auxin, I think it might be. It's like the wake drug, the chemical that we release and all of those sorts of things. So like, but through the research of a gentleman, Joe Takakashi, which my team at Brain and Mind Center, we had the wonderful opportunity to sort of speak with him and hear from him. There's been the discovery that he's led that not just each sort of organ has a cellular clock that syncs up with our main body clock, which is in our brain, in that is synced up via or recalibrated or, you know, restarted by our sleep cycle, the REM stage. But it's also each cell of each organ has its own individual clock that then sort of like a hierarchical series of events syncs up with each other and the organ clock, and then the organ clock syncs up with our body clock, and then our body clock syncs up with our circadian rhythms and the recalibration of all of that. So that kind of like sort of explains why our mood can be off. Our stomach produces most of the chemicals our brain uses for mood to function properly, and, you know, when to release and not release melatonin around, you know, feeling drowsier or more tired or more fatigued, I guess, and how much ketamine our brains sort of release so that we are more active in what we're able to do and accomplish and set our minds to the functionality element of things. And essentially, like, all of those things are affected by our body clock, which is located 2 inches in of our sort of into our head, right in between our eyebrows. If you think about it, that's 2 inches back. That's where it pretty much is. And it's paramount that we look after that during these times, these seasonal changes, in order to be able to reset and make that change as seamless as possible. Another thing that affects seasonal change or is part of seasonal change is not just the light quality, but also the temperature change. And you know, some of our, as a mammal, you know, some of our primate counterparts, I guess, tend to go into hibernation. Bears do, or squirrels do. Are they similar to us? I can't remember. Flora and fauna is not my expertise, but they go into hibernation. Your body slows down. Biologically, when it's colder, your body slows down and you're a bit more tired. It, you know, that's the whole idea of cryogenics, is that it slows things right down to function at a slower capacity, because there's a whole other series of things that I don't understand going on in there. But basically, the temperature change also influences and affects our sleep-wake cycles and how upbeat or how not upbeat and energetic we feel. And for me, it's that real sleep that is affected, and then having sort of it's a domino effect for a lot of us. So there's the feeling of tiredness, lethargy, your anxiety, and your cortisol levels are heightened. You're a lot more on edge, and things like rumination for me is a real big thing. And I think that's been a big thing, particularly most recently with the podcast recording these things. I'll start and I'll stop because it's just not good enough for me. I'm worried what people will think. I'm worried about putting something out that's stupid, or people will think that I'm not qualified enough to talk on, even though I'd be just talking on my own lived experience. And perhaps people don't want to hear from me. I think anyone who puts stuff out there, whether it be a tweet, a blog, a photo, or whatever on social media or communication platforms, realistically, even emails, I guess, there is that slight fear. Do they really want to hear about me on this, or do they really want to hear from me in general? And for me, that's a huge thing that sort of is a big self-doubt that happens during this time. And I think I'm just going to bite the bullet and put it out there. I am not going to listen back to this episode, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. So there might be parts that are disjointed or I've rambled on, and I heard just in the back of my mind have thought, you know, a few minutes back I had rambled a bit too much on about one particular point or area, and who cares? Like, I'm just trying to get back in the swing of things and be self-loving, and I'm breathing out a little because I just need to get back into things and feel a little more in control and less self-doubting and negate the guilt that I'm feeling at the moment. Like I said, I am blindsided and completely like flabbergasted that it's seasonal change this time. It's seasonal change, and it hits me. And it's normally, like I said, I'm either a close friend who experiences it as well, like it has been this time around, or it's been my clinician that's been like, yo, smell the coffee. It's seasonal change, mate. And that's normally what it is. And each time I ask for tips, I've done, over the years, I've actually done multiple sort of interventions, clinical interventions, from blue light therapy is a huge one. You'll find up in the northern areas where their light is like lower, their general light, their good light is lower than our bad light. And then their bad light obviously is even worse. So things to do with mental health and the challenges there and disorders there are a lot more prevalent, a lot higher because of the quality of light. And things like my mum used to live in the Yukon Territory in like way up north of Canada, where if you've ever seen ice road truckers, where those sorts of, it's black ice, black ice, black ice. There's like meters deep of snow, and it's those weird towns that, you know, Fargo was written about, where things you're just like, oh, is that normal? Like, should that, does that actually happen? And a lot of it can be put down to seasonal change or the effects of seasonal change, which are, you know, lacking of blue light or light quality. And so one of the things that is also really big in England as well is blue light therapy, which is, it comes in many forms. I've done the ones where it is like a little screen or light panel that literally for 20 minutes, you turn it on, and for 20 minutes, plug it in, turn it on for 20 minutes. When you first wake up at, say it's 7 o'clock that you're trying to stick to, you turn it on and you stare into it basically for 20 minutes. They come in all different shapes and sizes. They sometimes look like a vanity mirror. For me, I had like a little portable one, which was like the size of a mini iPad, I would say. They all kind of look like, they're the lights that they look exactly like the lights in like a tanning salon thingy, where they're like, they kind of look like a solar panel, and you stare into them for 20 minutes. And what that does is it sort of it's the receptors in your eyes then send a message to your brain to then suppress the excretion and the production of melatonin, which is like our sleeping drug, like our slow down drug. Or chemical, yeah, which then naturally causes the shift to the wake-up chemical, which is auxin. Let me just Google that, because it's going to annoy me. Melatonin versus orexin. Yeah, orexin is chemicals in your brain that help your body stay awake. Oh, orexins also make sure that rapid eye movement, the REM sleep, doesn't happen at the wrong times. So there you go. Some people will hear it anyways. So orexins. The reduction of melatonin production, reducing of melatonin production and increase of orexin production so that we wake up. So by doing that for the first 20 minutes of the day, as soon as you wake up, helps you do that. So I've done it in, and I found them to be really helpful, actually. I found them to be really helpful, and I've done it through the little portable one. I've done it through one that it made me feel like an absolute loser, but because you can't see anything and you're still allowed to walk around and do stuff, it's a baseball cap that you put on and it looks like you've got night goggles sort of like drop down attached to them. And it pretty much shines straight into your eyes because you want to get the blue light right into the back of your eyes so that those blue light receptors pick up and send that message through to do to, for your body to be like, all right, the day started, let's get going. And this one, the cat version, just it looks like a set of night goggles that are under the brim and just shine right into you. And I did that a few years back, and it was really weird because you couldn't really see anything or you could barely make out stuff. But my housemate would occasionally come out when I was first doing it, like when she woke up in the morning, she'd be like, "Are you okay? Like, what are you doing? Is this, some sort of," well, she didn't really know. But after the first couple of times, she got used to seeing me with this baseball cap and night goggles on at, 7 o'clock in the morning. And then most recently this year, actually, I've done a new one. Well, it's not a new one, but it's a really handy one that anyone can partake in or do. Same time, same thing. First thing you wake up in the morning. Wouldn't normally advocate for this, but pick up your phone, go to Google Images, and Google image the color blue. And you just want the most vibrant, like the Klein blue, to bring that up. Put it on full screen, turn your brightness right up and have it there for like 10 to 15 minutes and just look into it. Seems weird just to lie there and look into it. But if you do that, it'll do the same thing because all it is getting that blue light, which the color blue emits, getting that blue light to the back of your eyes, to those receptors. And that'll help. And I guess part of that, and like the second tip I would say that sort of conjoins with that, is getting up at the same time. So set your alarm for 7 o'clock and try and be as diligent as you can, because then it'll slowly become easier. And the more rigid you're about it by doing it every day, weekends are no exception. So getting up at seven, say going to bed at, I don't know, 10:30, 11 to achieve that sort of roughly 8 hour period of sleep or in bed helps. And by getting up at the same time, then doing the little bit of blue light for the first 10, 15 minutes, 20 if you really want to be an overachiever, really helps rejig and catapult your day as much as it can and as best as it can, and gives your brain the best opportunity, your body clock the best environment to then align everyone and get everyone going. So the REM is, what repairs the body and resets, and the orexins is, I just made the connection before, a key in that body clock reset. So yeah, that's that second tip. First tip being the blue light absorption, and being able to now do it on your phones if you're someone who is challenged by the seasonal shift. Getting up and going to bed at the same time and making sure that it's not too long and it's not too short, like just giving yourself and your body its ample amount of sleep. And then the third thing is exercise. And I am not good at this. Exercise and healthy eating, maybe movement is probably, physical movement is probably better. Exercise would be great. It gets the blood flowing, it gets the orexins going, all of the above. It lowers the melatonin, all of that. Getting some movement in, like going for a walk or just getting your body started, gets the blood flowing, and it helps your body wake up. So doing that first thing in the morning when you wake up is really handy. It's the last thing, and I struggle to do it every year. And I think it's normally when I start emerging from that seasonal change, sort of the effects of that, that's when I start to do it and I start feeling okay to do it, or I have more ability to do it. But then doing it, you know, early to mid-afternoon every day, because what that does is, you know, you're at the time sort of the orexins sort of start to lower and your melatonin and the light quality slows down or lowers. And by doing that, getting out in the sun or getting out and, well, ideally getting out in the sun, doing some movement. So is ideal. I've taken to, and a lot of the team at work have taken to doing afternoon meetings where you walk to the local cafe, you get a coffee, and you walk around the oval or walk back the long way. And that's really great because it sort of taps a couple of things. You've got the caffeine sort of, you know, getting that interim attention or activity going. Anyways, you know what I mean. You've got the sunlight and you've got the movement. And particularly if you're a desk job like mine is, it's always great to get up and move your body and get your legs going and circulating all the good things and processing all the toxins and things like that. So, yeah, those two things about getting movement, or those two times of getting movement into your day, and then not exercising 5 hours before sleep. Light exercise is okay, but you know, you don't want to light up or turn your muscles on, because then the blood gets pumping and then your muscles don't actually rest. Your muscles take roughly 5 hours to rest when they've been worked. So, you know, weightlifting or cardio or things like that. The other, like I said before, your gut or your stomach produces a lot of the chemicals and actually produces our melatonin and our orexin, which I did a sleep study a number of years back, probably going on 7 years back, where they hooked me up with like one of those Ridley Scott alien like head devices that had this, it was very Avatar, like it was this long braid down the back the electricity was plugged into a machine, and they were able to monitor my brain activity throughout the evening and whilst I was sleeping and all of that, and therefore the quality and kind of like their brain activity that an MRI can capture, but it was a live feeding thing. And each time, I think it was every half hour, they monitored my melatonin bar. Like I think I got three sort of full consecutive hours of sleep. And the way they did that was essentially them giving me an absorbent piece of cloth, kind of like a tampon basically, in my mouth, covered as much saliva as I can, and then they sort of took it back to the lab, and that was how they were able to measure the amount of melatonin, because it's produced in your gut. So obviously, if you look after your gut, it gives the body the best chance, again, to produce those chemicals and aptly produce those chemicals at the right times and the right levels and the right efficiencies. So in order to look after your gut, you've got to eat healthy. So even though when we're tired and we're cold, we want to, and just fatigued, we want to lean into those comfort foods. And that's because our brain knows that these comfort foods often have a higher amount of sugar in them. So your brain, being a predictive organ, looks at its receipts and thinks chocolate, junk, like chocolate, hot chips, burgers, crisps, lollies, all those sorts of things that are high in sugar and fast releasing sugar as well. Your body's like, these gave us an instant lift before. They gave an instant surge in energy. Whereas things like low GI in energy or less refined sugars, I'm not an expert, I'm not a nutritionist, I'm sort of only the amount of a nutrition I know pertaining to this sort of these sorts of areas in mental health, but is a bit slower in their secretion, which is better for longevity. of energy, but the body, your brain thinks we need it and we need it now. So they think about, yeah, all of those sorts of foods that are naturally comfort foods to get you going. But they're not always great for our gut. So obviously in moderation, you want to enjoy life and those foods like ice cream. Man, I love ice cream and chocolate and things like that. But in moderation, making sure you're getting your low GIs, getting all your food groups, getting your right balance of food groups and things like that on your plates at every meal. And that's huge for looking after your gut and then what your gut produces and then what that does for your brain. But essentially, that's kind of the summary of what seasonal change is. And for me, I get hit by it every time. No time I miss it. Although I did slightly miss it last September, October. And I think that was because I was traveling, that there was already a bit of a shift, or I don't know. I've got to look into that because I kind of did skip it, which was a real relief. I was hit more by I was only hit slightly by jet lag, but yeah, not really by seasonal change or the jet lag of like complete shift in time zones. So yeah, seasonal change comes down to the circadian rhythm disturbances and how melatonin and orexin play a role in that and how we can best provide the environment for our bodies to and equip our bodies with all that they need for the change that it goes through during the lower light quality, the lower temperature, and for those countries or states that have got daylight savings, the change in time zones, essentially. And I guess the ways that you can do that is through light. So increasing blue light in the morning and decreasing it in the evening. You know, by lowering, you know, your phone use and really bright white lights at night and sort of getting out into the sun or the light as much as you can in the morning, even if it's fake white light. What is that? Faux light? Like, you know, lamps and things like that. Through the trick on, I said on the phone with the blue color search, by moving, but by waking up and going to bed at the same time and keeping that schedule, and then by moving and getting moving to get the blood flowing and stopping moving so that you're not, your muscles aren't still warm and ticking over by bedtime. I've found them personally helpful. I can't do all of them at once at the beginning. I can't do any of them at the beginning. I just try and do my best. I think that's the big thing that I've learned over the last 10 years of being aware of it, is just taking the time to make the change. And sometimes it's been a couple of weeks, sometimes it's been a couple of months, like I said. And even if my alarm goes off and I roll back over and I don't get up for another hour and a half, 2 hours, I know that by doing that at the same time every day, every week, it will slowly, the rolling over will slowly decrease in time, and I'll eventually be able to get up out of bed at the same time and feel more alert, and my body will be in a better rhythm, and therefore my mood will be better and all of that. And you generally feel better. You feel more upbeat. You feel, I think when it first happened, I looked really sort of gaunt and grayish, and my clinician commented on that, and I hadn't really noticed because it's kind of like a bit of a slow slump into it. But if you're someone that really experiences the negative effects of that change, absolutely look at those. Hit me up if you want any information. There's great resources online, and the Brain and Mind Center, we've actually done a number of really wonderful papers, so you can look at those. But yeah, I'm back. I'm not listening to this episode back again because I don't want to be a perfectionist and sort of delete it. But welcome back to me. Apologies for being away. And I hope that I'm on the up. And I hope that you guys are having a good week too.